nice priced winners. Well, the horse in the cross country, I went 4 out of 5 in the cross country, and the horse at Oaklawn, that was a nice score. The Broberg, 2860. That Jackman, you know, it's so funny. Horses, when you see a horse, you know, kind of do something that they hadn't done. And I wrote that up. I mean, Jackman had come from off the pace to be second in his last start, and then came back in the same spot and looked like a horse now that could rate, and that if he could, that he had a big shot in here, and he was awesome. 2860. And the heavy favorite, Knock Her Down, no good. Ended up, Brad, we'll find out from Brad what happened there. But Classy Bridget, the Army Mule Filly, another stake winner for Army Mule. That was for Chris Hartman and J.D. Thoroughbreds and Partners. Back after this with Meg.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tell me something good. Tell me that.
about 5 minutes into hour two. That means Monday, 10-ish. Rich Migliori joins us. America's Day at the Races, and he of 4,450 wins, and so much more. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. There we go. I had you potted down. Sorry, Rich.
No, it's okay. I got my earbuds in, and I'm not really sure with technology. I just hope you hear me okay.
I hear you great, actually. Sounds super, and I know that the revenue generating eggs, all the chicken eggs, and whatever other eggs that are being produced may draw you away. It seems like you were out in front of the egg crisis.
Yes, too bad I don't have the 200 hens I used to have. we decided to scale back to just for personal consumption instead of selling them, and now it looks like
I didn't realize you had that many.
Yeah, we got up to about, it was nearly 200. But a lot of them we were selling the rare breeds and shipping them all over the country.
Wow.
And even selling, fertilized eggs, with the Easter eggers and the olive eggers. And, because our birds lay all different colored eggs.
Right.
They taste all the same. It's a egg, but and the things like you learn, which I had no idea, Carmela learned about it first. If you're shipping birds, and we ship them as far as New Mexico, and we never lost a bird, the night before you chop up apples and you soak them in water, and the apples absorb the water, and then you put them in the feeder, in the crates, the shipping crates, and they eat the apples and stay hydrated for the trip. And we never lost a bird, but it became work. I mean, we were running 5-6 coops, and they free range and organic, and you wind up, having to alternate the coops, and it's very time consuming, and then keeping the coops clean. And somebody from the Department of Agriculture has to come out, test your coops, test your birds, make sure that there's no disease. We were certified. I mean, it was Empire Swedish Flower Hens. That was the breeds that we were selling. And I wanted it to be Mother Cluckers, but I got vetoed.
Oh, boy. Oy vey.
No, couldn't you see it? Like a nice sassy hen on the packaging with little chicks following her. I thought that would have been cute marketing.
Well, now you're going to make me talk about the omelets. I've worked with an egg company and egg manufacturer in Ontario for a long time, and we introduced omelets, these cheese omelets, which are actually the omelets that were served on KLM.
Because
there was an airline caterer that facility that would make the omelets, and basically created a brand for a brand, and it was I'm Late Foods because it was it was convenient, but it also because it was omelets. I'm late omelet. It was sort of it was a play on omelet, but also because if you're late for breakfast, you're late for work, you could basically warm up like an omelet that you would make out of this world product. And
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Last Saturday, not this past, over a week ago, I haven't been working that much, and we went out. We had about 2 dozen eggs that we had collected over the past week, and we had a bunch of stuff in the fridge, different vegetables and stuff that, you got to muck out your fridge every now and then. And Carmela just made like the most incredible frittata with, we had zucchini in there and peppers and onions and then our eggs. And I made a beautiful salad, and it was like an amazing brunch. Like civilized people, it's cool. I like it. And I like, when the weather gets better, having our garden, you can go out, pick stuff, and make a nice dinner from stuff on the property and your eggs. And Yeah, it's a nice way. You know, I like the whole farm to table thing anyway. And around here, that's like really prevalent because I can get everything I need from either Wallbridge Farm around the corner, or I can get unpasteurized. But I can get everything within 2 miles of where I live that's all grown here naturally. I think it's pretty cool.
What's your Tina and I have this argument. What's your duck egg opinion?
Well, you know, we don't have ducks, but I've had them, and I don't know. I don't see that much of a difference, really.
That's what they say, and they're bigger. I mean, duck egg will. It's like what? Like three? One duck egg is worth like three chicken eggs.
Yeah, no, they're larger. You don't need, like, if you're going to do a three egg omelet, you don't need three eggs
exactly.
for the duck.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, no. But they're even more work than the chickens. Because we even looked at it. We looked into pheasants. You know, people. There's a pheasant farm down the road from us, and I talked to that guy, and that's kind of an interesting business. And they supply, you know, pheasants to restaurants. They have a shooting range, and people come and go on pheasant hunts, and then they do stuff with pheasant eggs. I mean, it's interesting. Quail is another thing, which is, by the way, my absolute favorite meal. If I'm gonna have one last meal, it's the way I cook quail. I love that stuff. Yeah. Hey, last night I made oxtails, which was it actually came out outstanding. I was very rarely I'm fully satisfied with anything I cook. Like, I like it, but I can do this better. I think I nailed it last night.
Atta boy. All right. Well, we get to look. We get to peek inside the literal farm to table at the Migliori house. Richie, good weekend of racing, and of course you guys are covering, you know, some Oaklawn, and you got Tampa involved, obviously, on Saturday. Let's dive into the weekend. Start with the Withers, actually, and give us some thoughts to what we saw.
All right, let's go specific. Go race by race, because I've been watching, but again, I haven't been working. So as you say them, they'll pop up in my head better.
Well, the Withers. I mean, here was
very good. Yeah. Very good. That horse wants more ground.
Yeah.
What a beautiful stride. Loved his gallop out. And he had to kind of make a little space for himself. So he showed he was, you know, brave and a little bit of toughness. I think horses, you know, particularly as the fields are going to get bigger and more competitive, you like to see that a horse will help a rider out the way Hitcho helped out Manny Franco. You know, put his shoulder on the horse outside of him and said, you know, excuse me. Kind of like those old ads, Jack Lane, when the big guy kicking sand on the little guy on the beach, you know.
Charles Atlas.
Oh, Charles, I knew it was one of them guys.
Jack Lane.
No, but I loved his stride. I just absolutely loved his stride. Beautiful.
Well, and one of the postscripts to it, and in fact, Dave Grenick, I think, wrote about, I think it was, the, yeah, it must have been Dave, about the gallop out. And Manny, the first thing apparently Manny said to Brad Cox's assistant was, I could barely pull him up.
Yeah, no, and it looked that way. And the interesting thing is when he hit the front, too, just when you watch the replay, look at his ears. His ears go up, and he basically is looking for something to make him stretch, and he didn't have it. Obviously, he was just that much better, but he was impressive. We can start talking about what are they competing against, who they are, but that looks like a horse to me that's really coming on at this time, and I'm certain you haven't seen the best of him yet. I liked him a lot. Litigate in Tampa was good. Kind of made a, you know, long, steady, sustained grinding kind of run wide. Wonder Wheel is good. I was taken with how much she'd grown. Like, she was always a big, strong kind of filly anyway, but she's got to be minimum 17 hands now. And loomed up. The winner was very game. Her name's escaping me at the moment.
Dreaming of Snow.
Yeah, Dreaming of Snow. Very game. You know, you got to give her a lot of credit. I'm really impressed with her tenacity, but you certainly feel like Wonder Wheel is you know, going to really move forward off of that race. And again, I was really blown away, and albeit I was watching on TV, but just how big and strong she looked. It just grew a lot into my eye, which would kind of correlate that she might need a run to get to where she needs to be physically.
Also in that race, Rich, and I when I was going through the top line in the first half hour, I mentioned that I was going to ask you about it. The other major contender going into this, here was, you know, the Pletcher, you know, the dreaming of oh my God, dreaming of Julia Baby, Julia Shining.
Julia Shining, yeah.
And, you know, we sometimes reference the bicycle horse, where, you know, you stop pedaling and you stop going. I mean, she was in a drive. I mean, it was a mile and 40 yards. It felt like she was in a drive for a mile and 10 yards.
Yeah, you know, listen, her sister Malathot was like that, but she's taken it to another level. And I always thought Malathot was going to be better with blinkers, and I think, you know, and when I say that, not that they're not good, it helps a rider when there's continuity, when the horse will get up into the bridle and carry you, and you can judge how much horse you have underneath you, where you can get to. And you could see Luis Saez is just having a constantly reminder. Think about people with short attention spans, right? And she was wide the first turn. She just runs and stops and starts, like with the emergency brake on. And I really feel like eventually when she gets blinkers, that might help. And maybe with maturity, although with Malathot, she was, you watch Johnny Blasquez ride Malathot, go back and watch replays. And constantly having to peck at her, keep her mind in the game, keep her going forward. And I see the same thing. I think that Philly has a world of talent, just doesn't do it with any sort of continuity. And she had a very tough trip. And again, it's hard for a rider. You got to come out trying to put him in the game, but you can't quite get to where you want to be. Now you're strung along wide into the first turn and just constant grinding. I will say this, it speaks a lot for Luis Saez's fitness to be able to ride one the entire race like that. But she's got a lot of ability, just doesn't use herself properly yet. You know, where if the complete flip side, watch Wonder Wheel in the same race and the way she's towing Tyler Gaffney into the race. And, you know, it's such a hard thing when you have a horse off the bridle, Steve, and you like looking for a spot. That wasn't the case Saturday, but let's say you're inside and you're looking to go to a spot. It's one thing to get to a spot, and it's another thing to have enough horse to hold the spot. And when a horse isn't taking a hold of you and kind of letting you gauge how much you have underneath you, you don't know, should I head there? Because if I get there, I might not be able to stay there, and then I'm going to get shuffled back. And it's very, very difficult to ride those kind of horses, but world of ability, obviously.
Dreaming of Snow, and looking forward to conversation with Jerry Bennett. Terrific win for him. He's won a lot of races for a lot of years. We just talked to Don Little Jr. You must have you and the Centennial Silks.
Well, we go back to some Alan Jerkin stories. Alan was their original trainer when they got started. And I rode a really nice filly for him. I don't remember. It's either top account or top issue. And I won a stake on her at Aqueduct, the Busanda, one of those. And yeah, I was young. I might have been 18, 19 years old. And yeah, I rode her. She was in front. I turned for home. I think I hit her twice right-handed, twice left-handed. She won by 4 or 5 lengths. I was so happy. I won a stake for Alan. And came back, and he started yelling at me. And I was like, but Alan, what's the matter? We won. And this is exactly what and this is satellite radio, so I could say what he said. Yeah, then you come back to the barn and get this bitch to eat. You had to ride her so hard, now she won't be in the feed tub for a week. And he took me off her. And I did. I rode her too hard, but I was a kid. I got excited. And then a nice horse that he had for them named Rubiano. And I started getting on Rubiano in the mornings, a very high-energy horse. Man, he was tough colt. And when I was like days off or if I was done early riding, I'd go to Alan's barn in the afternoon and we'd tack up Rubiano and I'd hack him all over Belmont because he just needed to be out of the stall. He needed to be ridden. Mm-hmm. That was great. And then I broke his maiden at Gulfstream. And then he kind of went through, I think, like a weird stage mentally where he just got a little too studdish and wanted to hang on horses. And eventually the horses were transferred to Scotty Schulhofer. And then Rubiano grew up. But he was a horse that had tipped his hand as a baby that he could run. He just, he was high energy. He was a tough colt.
And I just pulled up because he's in the book Champions, and just looking at Jose Santos and Julie during the championship year.
Yeah, he was very good, a long history going back with Centennial and. They play the game at a high level. And again, litigate, long, sustained kind of run. It's always been my contention that horses that turn out to be Derby horses obviously have to have that kind of ability. But are horses that are able to make a long, sustained run or two distinct runs, a run to position and then idle and then kind of kick on again? Think Ali Sheba, even when he clipped heels with Bet twice, like he had kind of made his move around the turn to get to a position to make a run. And then he had, the ability to finish. And then you have your freaks like a Seattle Slough who can, just blaze the whole way. And people should go back and watch the start of Seattle Slough's Derby. He got left and the whole crush of horses just folds over him. I always liken it to a wave at the beach kind of curling around. He's going to just wipe you out. And if Jean Kruger didn't have so much confidence in his horse and wasn't as much of a daredevil as he was, look at the way he bulls his way between horses the first 70 yards, pushes, I don't know if it was Run Dusty Run or so, he pushed somebody, I know Raymond Earl, and kind of just like shouldered him out of the way and then was up head and head the lead with For the Moment. And if he didn't make that move, Seattle Slough doesn't win the Kentucky Derby. Now, obviously, he had the horse to do it, but a lot of guys would have said, "Oh crap, I got left, and let me, I got to sit here and, figure it out." Gene reacted and just kind of pushed the other horse out of the way. It's remarkable that effort in the Derby from Seattle Slough and Kruger. It may be the most overlooked, subtly great maneuver in racing history.
Hmm. Well, this is why we let you and Tony just riff and opine because you got a unique perspective that just can't really be offered by too many people.
Isn't it funny though? Like I can remember these things, being a kid watching Slough and. They're big trees now. I climb in a tree by the Belmont paddock to see him when he ran when Angel took over the mount. I think it was in the Marlboro Cup. Gone to the races that morning with a mutual clerk that worked in the money room. So it was cool because you got to get there early and then stay late, go down hanging by the jockey's room, waiting to bother jockeys to get goggles and stuff. And I couldn't see Seattle Slough and he was, to me, he was my favorite horse, racehorse growing up. And climbing a tree and being able to see over everybody to see Seattle Slough before a security guard made me get down. And those trees are huge now. Like, you can't even reach the bottom branch to climb up there. But he was like the black stallion to me. He was just an amazing, amazing horse. And if you think about, in this context, Steve, what he did as a racehorse, and then what he went on to do as a stallion, you can make a very good case that he is the greatest horse of all time. He's top probably 10 racehorses that I've ever seen and probably top 5 stallions that anybody's ever seen. So if you combine the two, to me, he was the most complete, the best horse I ever saw.
Very cool. Well, and it's funny because not everybody has to have the same perspective either about that. I mean, in terms of you know, versatility. I mean, obviously the Dr. Fager fans, those that focus on Dr. Fager as their greatest ever, and you know, spectacular bid as the greatest. There's all different kinds of viewpoints.
Bid was incredibly great. I mean, he was one of the greatest of all times. I never gave him his full credit when I was younger because, you know, they were always talking about him, like, you know, best horse to ever look through a bridle, this kind of stuff. And, you know, the way I grew up, and listen, my perspective, you mature, you evolve, you look at things different. But as a kid, I didn't like Joe Namath because he talked too much and he was always, you know, braggadocio, right? I didn't like I rooted for Joe Frazier, not Muhammad Ali, because Ali was, you know, always, you know, the showman. And that was influenced from my father. You know, he didn't like any of that. So, of course, I'm not going to like that, right? But, you know, I preferred Johnny Unitas than Joe Namath, right? Crew cut, go out, do what he had to do. Now, as you get older and you read and you see things, you the unbelievable amount of respect for Muhammad Ali. He could have taken the easy way out and said, induct me. And then he would have, you know, gone and done, you know, sparring sessions to entertain the troops, and he would have never stood out. But he stood on a principle, which when I was a kid, I was like, he's scared to go off and fight. Like, you know, it's just funny how your perspectives change. And now, like, the amount of respect and awe for somebody who has that, you know, ability to believe in something and stand up for it and not bow down to pressure. I mean, that really, you know, I wish I would have had that perspective when I was younger. Joe Namath and what he had to be dealing with his bad knees, and you know, you read about some of the surgeries he had, and be able to go out and perform. Well, guess what? You know, if the guy wants to brag, he's got every right to brag because he can back it up, and he's paying the price for it. But I don't know why I went in this direction, but just interesting. That's all.
A couple of other notes too, Rich, in terms of the weekend. Let's fold in some Aqueduct beside the Withers, and you had a couple of winners. Jim Chapman, who does a really good job, that Wingfield winner, Drew's Gold.
Yeah, he was really good, and I like something I read this morning, how they're, you know, probably looking for the Bayshore and take it one step at a time, not looking to jump in and try to get Derby points. And you know, I respect that. I think recognizing where a horse is at and maybe what their strengths are and playing to those strengths. I was laughing because I was just talking about this the other day. Friend of mine, or, you know, acquaintance of mine, a trainer, claimed a horse that won a 6-furlong race. This was back in the fall. And I say, hey, you made a nice claim there. He's like, yeah, I'm going to run him back long on the grass. He just won going 6 furlongs on the dirt. Why are you going to reinvent the wheel? Like, why do people do that? This horse just did this, and now we're going to be smarter than everybody else and do something different. You know, yeah, maybe eventually you find something, you experiment, but you got a horse that's showing you they're good at this. Play to their strength. Set them up to succeed, not to fail. But I always get a kick out of that. Like, you know, if somebody claims a horse that's been winning sprinting, and the first thing they're going to do is change it all up. And then also, I mean, that he was good. Then that was a good race. And funny how, you know, which I was very happy about for a number of reasons. You know, great for that ownership group, Adelphi, Matt Kater. But my son Joseph bought that filly at the Timonium, Paisley Tipton Timonium sale. And I was there with him. And he came to me and said, Dad, come look at this filly with me. I really like her. This was when she was a yearling. And I went and looked at her, and she, man, I really like her too. And she's such a balanced individual, and obviously out of a mare that produces. And so he was able to pick her up for Matt Kater, Adelphi. And you know, she's won 5 of 7, you know, 5 in a row, winning the Broadway yesterday. Joseph's representing Katie Davis. While Trevor's on the sidelines. So she rode her, and what a good ride she gave her. Didn't break great, got shuffled a little bit early, but was calm, cool, collected. And it's really hard for a rider that's not getting opportunities on those kind of horses and those kind of races to keep their composure as well as she did. But she was just had ice water in her veins and had a lot of horse underneath her, and she won easy. So from the Migliori bloodstock end of it, it was a good day, you know, picking a filly out like that that's just made these progressive steps. And then as a jockey's agent, get it done. And, you know, Isabella needs a new pair of shoes. So, no, so, you know, that was really good. And listen, admittedly, I'm not paying the kind of attention I pay when I'm doing America's Day at the races, you know, all the time. I still pay attention, just not to that level. And I'll be back next Saturday, and then it's pretty much back in the flow of things, you know, every weekend until Belmont, and then it's every day. But so I'll start paying attention more. But watching races yesterday, I'm impressed with a couple of riders, Katie Davis being one of them, and Romero Mirage. I'm going to tell you something. That kid can really ride. And it's not the races you win that define you as a rider. It's sometimes the third place or the fourth place finish that no one notices all the right moves you made, all the good things you did, getting the most out of a horse and giving them every opportunity. I was very, very impressed watching him yesterday.
Well, I know he won, and he won early in that pick five, although it wasn't on a big price, right? Yeah, it was on Hypnocurrency for Jamie Begg. And paid $1,160. I mean, the fireworks here were pretty wild. I know Kerry Medever contributed to this, but you know, you mentioned Katie Bug, and that's a great win for her. The stake paid $1,260. Randy Persaud with Papillon Ice. That was 26-1, and then came the Kerry Medever. Bells on her toes with Herman Harkey. That 33-6.
I've been impressed with Harkey too. And I watched him over the summer. He was getting on horses for Jimmy Bond every morning. And really nice hands, really good on horses in the morning, gets horses to cooperate and do it properly. And but I had a laugh. I went down to the jockey's room a month ago and was talking with somebody, and Richie Velez, one of the valets who I worked with Steve DeMar when we both started out, and he said something, maybe to Dylan Davis, you wouldn't want any part of him from the eighth pole to the wire pointing at me. And Heeman Harkey says, oh, come on out there, we'll show you a thing or two. I started laughing. I was like, Heeman, please. Yeah, I won almost 4,500 races. I won more races than anybody in the history of this racetrack. You're going to show me? I started laughing. I had to walk away shaking my head. Even overweight, old, and broke down, I think you'd have trouble handling this. But
Listen to you. I did notice, I don't know if you saw this in the chart, that was the Harkey race for Kerry Medever. Monarch Farm and Shannon Castro Pike are the owners, but there was a claim in here, Swedish Sugar, who was third, Nat Crone out there claiming horses.
Man, I rode winners for Nat Crone going back to 1980.
I was going to say.
And then I rode a winner from Gary, trained the horse, and his name's escaping me. He wound up at Old Friends Cabin Creek, a fast horse. At the very tail end of my career. I shouldn't bring this up because then I'll get a text now from Gary. Yeah, if you wouldn't have rode your horse, what was his name? We finished second.
Which, Lloyd?
Yeah, Lloyd Dobler. If you wouldn't have rode him, I would have broken neck. We would have won that day. I'll get that. I'll get that text. Yeah, that's funny. That's really funny.
It's nice to see Nat. Nat still in there swinging. He claimed one for Lolita Shivmangal. That makes me also think of. And I guess I suppose it'll be in Florida, but. I was with Willie Martinez last week at Gulfstream, Rich, and
right.
He tells me we were in the paddock and the horses started to head up to the up to the track, and we were talking, and he said, "Oh, I got to run. I'm supposed to meet Parbu," and I said, what's going on with Parboo? And he said, the Parboos are coming back.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Yep. Business.
And Willie, me and Willie go back to the 80s and, you know, rode with him. And you talk about a guy that always looked good on horses, always stylish. You know, like, listen, winning is what matters. And obviously he's a winner. But when I always admired when guys look so good on horses. You know, like as a kid watching like Chuck Balthazar, right, finish on horses.
You know, I'm going to hear from Chuck in about 3 seconds now because Chuck always listens.
But, you know, like, again, I go to Akron and watch these guys. You know, man, I could never look like that on horse. Angel, obviously, you know, comes to mind. And, you know, Georgie Velasquez, when he's getting that rhythm. And, you know, there's so many over the years that you try to take things from. And, you know, for me, it was more based in New York. But, and Willie was always a guy, even as a rider that was having success, I admired how good he looked finishing on horses. Jose Ferrer, you know, another guy who rides the Tampa's doing, you know, tremendous still. We had the bug together. He always looked good on horses. Still does. I mean, it's, you know, like I always had to work at that. When I first started, I didn't like the way I looked on horses. I think Sam Renick wrote an article about me earlier because that I look unorthodox on a horse, but you know, I ride a smart race, you know, and then over time, I mean, obviously I worked at it and I got better and I looked better on horses, but early in my career, I hated the way I looked on horses. And, you know, you see these guys and I really admired that, but that's the benefit of being, you know, on a circuit with those kind of riders, because you could emulate, you could look to it and say, all right, I got to figure out how to do that. And, they gave you a roadmap, basically.
Well, you know, and Willie's found himself into a nice, you know, kind of a nice pattern where he rides the middle part of the year from at Presque Isle, you know, all basically, you know, summer into the fall, and then takes the winter off. And, it's been kind of nice for him. And he, you know, he's still out there and he still wins, you know, 50 a year. And what's he got? He's got 36. He's got 3,606 wins.
It's a fantastic, a tremendous career. You know, and to have the longevity, I really appreciate it, admire it. It's difficult. You know, it's not an easy career. You know, we talk about, you know, riders, and you know, obviously, you know, now we talk about mental health and different things. You don't have the same, you know, you don't have a team. You don't have a team doctor. You don't have a coach. You don't have a trainer. You're basically freelancing. You're going back to the locker room with your competitors, and they may be great guys, but at the end of the day, you want to beat them. They want to beat you. You're not looking to, you know, you want the best for everybody, but you're not looking to help them get, you know, better than you. It's just an odd dynamic, and I don't know what the answer would be to kind of set up more of a support system for riders, and particularly young riders who, you know, you think you know things, but you know nothing. You're a kid. You have no clue, really.
Now, one thing that's amazing, it's really remarkable about Willie's career, is how, you know, he had been successful. He was winning from early on. His first graded stake win came in 1993. And, you know, he was banging around and had, you know, had his share of somewhat obscure stake winners. And then he, around the late, I guess around the late 90s, he ran into a tremendous patch, including, you know, hooking up with Buff Bradley and landing on Brass Hat, which got him his first grade one in the Don Handicap. And then he lands on Trinidberg, you know, ends up winning a Breeders' Cup Sprint. That's his last graded stake win, actually.
Brass Hat won the Mass Cap, and I finished second to him on Fairbanks for Todd.
Wow.
Yeah, and I thought I could shake him around a turn. I just couldn't shake him. And, I'm pretty sure Willie rode him that day. I'm almost 100% sure.
Well, and here, let's take a look, because the Mass Cap... it wasn't graded then, Rich. Unbelievable. That's sad. 2007, there you are, with Dr. Pleasure III, with Cornelio, evening attire fourth. Shuffling Madness. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Shuffling Madness was, that was Del Carroll Shuffling Madness.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, wow. Well, and you know what? That does open an opportunity. We mentioned the Centennial, Rich. Before we wrap up, I got Ed Mosier joining us next. Some appreciation from you for Pat Kelly.
Oh, man. You know. Just what a tremendous career. And, you know, I remember being a 7-pound bug riding horses for Pat. He had Live Oak and putting me on a really fast filly named Lean. Eddie Maple had been riding her, and she'd been, like, in stakes. She might have come out of the Interboro. And he gives me the mount and allowance race, gets the weight off. She was, at that time, the fastest thing I ever sat on. And, you know, talk about helping a young rider. When you put them on a horse like that, it gives other people confidence to put you on better horses. You know, like, wow, hey, if he's good enough to ride that horse for Pat, you know, I won't hesitate to use him on this horse. And one of my all-time favorite horses that Pat trained, also for Live Oak, was a New York bred named Island Sun. What a beautiful horse he was. He won on dirt. He won on turf. He might have been New York bred, like, turf horse one year. We went to the award dinner up in Albany. They had it near the airport, the hotel there. He was as pretty a moving horse. And, you know, and listen, Pat, another guy like Schossberg, like Rick Violet, you know, previous, who did so much for people on the backstretch and aftercare, and always just someone to admire.
Really nice. Well, and I just looked him up. Island Sun, Noble Dancer. Noble Dancer for Mrs. Weber, and eight time winner.
He was such a nice horse. What a nice. Yeah, you know, it's funny how you can still remember how much fun he was to ride. I just loved riding.
I love it. Well, I'm glad I asked, and I'm glad we circled around to that. Rich, what a fun visit, and I appreciate it as always. Get back to work. We got a spring day here in February. Apparently, winter's over.
Are you
over.
Back in New York?
For another 36 hours. I leave for New Orleans tomorrow afternoon.
Man, you don't let any musk run to your.
we got Risen Star Week. We got Rebel Week. We got Big Cap Week. We got HBPA Convention. We got NHC. The people need to know. They need to hear. They've got to be brought into the action.
Well, I look forward to seeing you eventually again. I look forward to my talks with you on Monday. And I'll just ask everybody to check out America's Day at the Races. I'll be back on Saturday.
Well done. Rich Migliore, everybody. MIG 4450, always fabulous. And really, any topic, we go, starting with eggs. That was kind of funny. Ed Mosier is going to join us, as mentioned, and we're going to talk about the Golden Gate Fields performance. And a hammer, I think we're going to slip Hammer in tomorrow. Ed Mosier, though, is going to join us on the heels of an El Camino Real Derby win. And this was a terrific effort. Chase the Chaos on a Stern. That looks like Ed. He looks like a mile and a quarter and beyond is going to be in right in his wheelhouse. Congratulations!
Thank you,
Ed. Talk about this horse, because it's always nice when the invaders show up and the local horses fend them off.
Yeah, he's just acted like a really good horse ever since he got into my barn. And, you know, you're always hoping they're going to be as good as you think they are. And he showed it the other day when he ran.
Yeah, he's a gelding. And you mentioned that he came into the barn, started with Diodoro at Canterbury. How did he come your way?
I think they're just looking for a place to run. I think they like the synthetic. You know, he's bred for turf, and he's bred for turf up top and bottom. And so I thought they thought the synthetic would be a good thing for him.
How about that? And, you know, it's he's really come along under your care. And you mentioned the turf. He broke his maiden at Canterbury going a mile last September. And he certainly didn't do it with a serious figure. He got a 22 buyer. But then you gave him a little bit of time. You got to know him, and you started him sprinting in the Golden Nugget to get a feel, I guess, for him. I mean, talk about what you learned and how he's come along.
Yeah, like I say, he was in great shape when he came to our barn, and that race that he ran in Canberra, you know, I know they didn't give him a very good buyer, but if you watch the race, he was like in tight, like nowhere to go, and I mean, he had every chance to get beat that day, and he still won. So I was pretty impressed with the way he ran, even though they did not give him a good buyer. Yeah, so when we started in a sprint, just because, you know, we were looking to run in the long mile race anyway.
Yeah.
And I think the allowance race, the timing wasn't good, and so we tried the stake to start with.
You tried the Gold Rush, and he ran solidly. Passarando, who he was given a little experience to, and he wins that. And you come back yourself with an allowance, and all of a sudden it feels like he took a next step in the race at the end of December.
Yeah, I mean, he's honestly, I love this horse. As soon as he came into the barn, and then after we ran him one time, honestly, I thought he was like a really, really good horse. You know, maybe not just an average horse. I've had a lot of horses, and
sure,
I just ran him the one time, and I said this. I felt like he could be like a really, really good horse.
How about that? Well, and you say, yeah, you know what a good horse looks like. You're approaching 2,000 career wins, so yeah, you've seen a few, and I'm sure we'll talk about Stiletto Boy in a minute. But you know, this is a gelding, Ed, and so you know, yes, you got a free pass into the Preakness, but really, you can really have a lot of fun. There's no rush. There's no particular demands. What's in your head?
Well, we got to discuss things. The owner, Bill Dory, and Adam Ferenc, we need to sit down and talk about it. We've briefly talked what the next steps will be, but we've talked a little bit about the Santa Anita Derby, and we've talked a little bit about like the Jack Ruby Stakes, because it is synthetic in Turfway. And, you know, ruled out the Kentucky Derby either.
Nope.
I mean, we got to sit in the back of our mind.
He's out of an Uncle Mo mare and was bred by Mr. and Mrs. Dale Knapp in Pennsylvania. And so the Pennsylvania breeding program has got themselves a new stake winner. Could be a lot more going here forward. He's by a Stern. And when you talk about considering something like the Santa Anita Derby, in terms of the way he moves, what's your dirt thought about him?
You know, obviously we haven't trained him on dirt, but his first race was on the dirt, but it was a muddy track.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen the race myself. I haven't seen that one. I saw the other race he ran at Canterbury, but it looked like he was off the pace, and it said he's between horses and in the mud. So, I mean, to me, that sounds like nothing bothers him.
Well,
for a 2-year-old first time starter running the mud and come from off the pace and between horses, that's like, sounds good to me.
Well, and you know, and one thing too, he's come out of some races. You know, he's kept good company. You know, particularly since coming, you know, to SF and you know, coming to Golden Gate, he's had, you know, that Happy Does was behind him, and the allowance turned right around and won. There's obviously something here, and we got to talk about Armando Ayuso, who obviously was thrilled to win. He pumped his fist and stood up a little bit at the wire. But Ed, this horse kept going. This was a mile and an eighth, and I saw him tear off, you know, around the turn. He obviously will go any route of ground.
Yeah, Armando, he actually said he was just waiting around the turn, and he just kind of shook the reins and and he just took off. He said he had a lot of horse left.
Yeah.
And coming back after the race and, you know, came out of the receiving barn, he wasn't nervous and excited, you know, like some horses do. He was actually just happy and felt great coming back to the barn.
How about that?
He was happy. Like he didn't do anything. It was like an easy deal for him. Hey, he's a good horse. He acts like a really good horse.
Give us a little bit more about Ayuso as well, who you use liberally.
I don't know him that much. He was, he rolled into Golden Gate last spring, I think it was, like a year ago. And I thought he looked great right off the bat, you know, riding horses. I think it seemed like he knows horses really well to me. And then he was down there at Del Mar, and he was actually breezing some of my, like Soletta Boy and then Tarantino for me down there at Del Mar, and he was going to ride him, and then I think he ended up going back to Golden Gate or something like that. But no, he's got really good hands, and I think he's a good rider. He gave the horse a perfect ride.
Very much, and he's been on him since he came to you, and we'll watch for Chase the Chaos going forward. Let's also touch on the. What can you tell us about the owners?
I don't know Adam very well. I'm pretty sure that this is his first horse.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Bill Dory, he knows him. He's from Canada, and I think he just knows him like a friend, like a neighbor, I think.
Wow.
And so he got into that horse. They didn't pay much money for him. I think it was $10,000 as a yearling.
Unbelievable.
And but Bill Dory, I've trained horses for him for quite a while now, probably 25 years, probably maybe more. I don't know. Quite a while, and he's always been a really good client. He's got other horses, he's had him with Robert Tino Diodoro, and he's got some more of his trainers from Canada, and he's had quite a few horses, but he always gives me horses every year, and we've stood his mares and babies at our farm in Galt, California. Right now they went up back to Canada. He's got a farm for himself up there, but often we have his mares and babies in California.
Nice. I've seen the name. I've seen Dory's name. So nice to get, a little background. And of course, we see the names that you send out regularly. You mentioned Stiletto Boy. Speaking of, geldings that have been consistent and strong. Give us some thoughts about where you stand coming out of that nice finish in the Pegasus.
Last year, we ran third the year before also in the Pegasus. And after that race, he had campaigned pretty good going into that. And after that, he was never the same, even though he won a grade two after that. Hmm. He was just like tired, and I just couldn't really get him back to his normal thing. And finally ran like a bad race in the Pacific Classic, and then we gave him 2 months at our farm. We brought him back, and his first start was there at Santa Anita the day after Christmas, and he ran really good second to Country Grammar, and then he ran third into Pegasus. And to me, the horse right now is as good as he's ever been. He came out of the Pegasus this year, like, really, really good. I mean, happy. His weight's good. And we're pointing him towards the Santa Anita handicap on March 4th.
Well, I'll be out there and looking forward to it. The big cap, a logical opportunity for him. And, of course, this one, a family affair. To have Stiletto Boy is kind of a nice scenario, Ed.
Yeah, I love seeing my brother do good. He's been really good to me, and he owned the one Grade One winner that I had, and that was a Stormy Lucy.
Oh yeah,
and so he's done a lot of good things for me.
Well, and I remember we were talking about Stormy Lucy and Stiletto. Clearly, it feels like the handicap division is wide open. There's no reason why, you know, if he's feeling good and hitting solid, that he shouldn't be a player this year.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out who's going in there. From what we hear, Royal Ship is not going, Express Train's not going, Country wow. Grammar not. Taiba, one of Baffert's, they're in yeah. Saudi right now.
Yep.
So it's not going. So pretty sure it sounds like we'll get defunded. And I'm sure there'll be some new shooters in there, but yeah, I think we'll fit in there good. He's doing, I think, as good as he's ever done.
Oh, that's tremendous. And of course, Mike Smith, on him on a regular basis. And, you know, he's a full, is he five or six?
He's five is all. He ran the Breeders' Cup Classic when he was three.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the Pacific Classic is really probably his only off race of his whole career.
It really was. He was getting tired even before that, and we were gonna kind of turn him out even way earlier than that, but then he won the California Stakes, the grade two, and it was like probably one of his best races, and so we went a few more races after that, and he's just a little tired, not bad, just wasn't quite the same, you know, but he's good now, he's doing great.
He's a Shackleford, and out of a Market Tree Mare, he's already made $1.4 million, and he's gelded, so he's not going anywhere either.
You got it.
Nothing like having those ATMs going down the shed row. Gelding. Keep them healthy, keep them happy. And, Ed, you've done that a long time. And you know, I know you've got like a little, it's like a website, a way for people to reach you. It's under Moger Racing, MOGER Racing.com, contact information, and you put, you know, you put people together, and you know, you invite people to come to you to train their horses, and you don't win close to 2,000 races by accident.
Yeah, it's been quite a few years, like 47 years I've been training, I think.
Wow.
Started when I was 19, so
we've talked about that, right? Going back to your roots in the game.
Yeah, I started in Long Acre. Well, actually, I started in Spokane, yep. Washington. I was grooming at Long Acres before I got my license. But after that summer, Long Acres, I went over to Spokane, Washington. Playfair was the name of the track,
sure.
And that's where I got my trainer's license.
Well, you know, John White follows you, Ed, next. So I know how John will start his segment. He will provide. He'll fill in all the blanks.
Yeah, that's right. I knew he was from there.
Oh, he. There's nothing more important to him than. Then Long Acres and Playfair and the Long Acres Mile, and it's the heritage is unbelievable when it comes to the horsemen from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it was a nice life for me. wasn't that easy. It's not like an easy thing to do, but I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it my whole life, and I still enjoy it.
Well, and when horses like this come along, Stiletto Boys and Chase the Chaos types, it makes it easy to jump out of bed at 3:30, quarter of four.
That's what we're looking for.
Exactly. Ed, thank you so much for this, and continued success. Look forward to seeing you for Big Cap Week.
Thank you.
Ed Moger, and a win in the El Camino Real Derby. Chase the Chaos. And if you haven't seen it, this is a nice horse, and as you can tell. And certainly Ed knows his way around a good horse. Let's do this. Top of the hour is right on us. And as I knew, you know, I that was a loaded question about his background because I knew he was Pacific Northwest, and I knew that it would set up John White's visit. John's going to join us next, hour three at the races. Brad Cox asked for a deferment to Tuesday. So we'll get Brad Cox in tomorrow. And instead, we'll flip-flop Dave Hill into the 11:30 slot. And so Dave will put a bow on his NFL analysis season for the New York Times. He's been just spectacular. And he had an approach, and he wrote it really all season long. And he relied on the data and you know, taking teams with points in the spots that, you know, where he had an edge. And I hope a lot of people, you know, learned an approach. We'll certainly have to talk about, you know, the vagaries of, you know, stewards, in this case, referees. It's no different. And I guarantee there's people that, you know, wandered into sports betting either during the season or for Super Bowl. And I mean, some things are just bad luck, which we all, you know, we experience every day. A bad trip, a hole getting shut off. Kenneth Gainwell, first score, right? I mean, if his shoulder twists a little bit, he scores that first touchdown. And I think it was, I don't know, what was it, plus? What was it? I forget what. It was a nice, Kenneth Gainwell, first TD of the game, was a big number. So, some people are learning the lessons we've all learned as horse players over the years. It's not as easy as it looks. It's excruciating in a lot of ways. Hour three, Monday. Got a couple days here at home before we head to NOLA. And getting excited, too. Looking forward to it. Back after this, hour three, John White next.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses.